remember Krishna all the time.
Wow. Well, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that I am the taste of what?
Water.
Vasoham apsum kantiya prabhasi prabhasmi sashi surya. And the sound in ether. That means all the sound is Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. So if you see everything, including this couch, including the clothes that you wear, that's all Krishna's property, including your body. Everything is Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. Isha Bhasham Idam Sarvam Yatkinja Jagajam Jagat Tena Chiktena Bunjita Magriha Kashasvidanam. So everything belongs to Krishna. Nothing belongs to us. And that will help you remember Krishna all the time. And also chanting his name and reading Bhagavad Gita about how everything in this world is a manifestation of Krishna, like the of fishes. Which fish represents Krishna? Does anyone know?
The black goldfish.
The black guy. I think you have a different Bhagavad Gita than I have, right? The goldfish represents Krishna. That's the Kesava Gita.
No, the black.
The black fish represents. There's another Kesava Gita. What about the Bhagavad Gita? Does anyone know of aquatics? Krishna's what animal? The what?
The
turtle. He was told that. Hare Krishna. Krishna is the shark. The shark. As you say in Australian English, shark. But I say shark. Shark. So anyway, that's interesting, the English difference. And then... So of mountains, Krishna is what? What?
Krishna is what in the mountains?
The water.
The water and the mountains. Very interesting. Does anyone have read the Gita here? Mount Meru. What other examples of Krishna? And what is Krishna in men? He's the ability in men. And what is he in the strong people? This is easy. The strength. So that's all in the Bhagavad Gita. Did you know that? What chapter is that in? What are the chapters in the Bhagavad Gita? Are there any Bhagavad Gita scholars here? Take a guess. You only have 18 choices, so.
Chapter 10.
There you go. You get three more points.
Give the points.
That's a time.
Yes, Maharaj, you can give points on
I give points. Yeah. All right, so let's have another question then.
Yes, Arvinda.
Arvinda?
What is Swami?
Swami? Well, that means, I'll tell you a funny joke first. It means someone who goes swimming is called a Swami. It's a joke. The word Swami means to control. It's a person, refers to a person who is the controller. So it can refer to someone who is a sannyasi, and it can also be a name that the wife uses for the husband. Because the husband sometimes is the master. Not in Kali Yuga anymore. In Kali Yuga, the man calls the wife Swamini. Some of the children. I mean, hope they don't take too literally what I'm saying. So Swami means, most of the times it's used to refer to someone who's a sannyasi, wears saffron robes, and who travels all around the world telling people about Krishna. That's a good question. Okay.
And with,
Madhavi.
Madhavi.
My question was, some people at school, they say, like, the sun is going to blow up and explode, and the earth is not going to be there anymore, but spiritually, I don't think that's true, because, like, Krishna is the creator of all, and he wouldn't make the sun explode, so I'm not sure, like, what would, like, really...
Well, at the end of the creation, which is a long time. You know how long that is? At the end of Lord Brahma's lifetime, there's the whole destruction of the universe. But Lord Brahma's lifetime is much longer than our lifetime. How many yugas? In Lord Brahma's lifetime. Divya yugas. There's four yugas in... Four yugas make up a Divya Yuga. And how many of those are in Lord Brahma's lifetime? Anybody know? It's in the Bhagavad Gita, another verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Sahasra Yuga Padyantam. That's one day. And Sahasra Yuga is 1,000 ages is one day of Lord Brahma, 1,000 ages is one night of Lord Brahma. And how... All right, let's go back a little bit. How long is the four yugas? How many years do the four yugas last?
4.32 million.
Yeah, that's right. So you have about 4.3 million. In other words, 4,300,000 or 3 lakhs. So times 1,000. I'd have to get my calculator out. Times 2, oh my God, times 365, because it's 365 days in a year, right? Does Lord Brahma have a leap year? I don't know. And times 100, and that's a big calculation, I'm not going to do it right now. And that's how long Lord Brahma lives. And when he dies... He goes generally back to Godhead. Sometimes, in our universe, he's a pure devotee. He goes back to Godhead. And then the whole thing gets finished. Bhutva, bhutva, paliyate. It's like a show that's temporary. So at that time, the sun is finished. The earth is finished. And even sometimes, when Lord Brahma goes to sleep at night, there's a partial destruction of these things in the universe. Even when he has a nap in the middle of the day.
So it's like the earthquakes and...
No, earthquakes are smaller than that. But when Lord Brahma has a nap in the middle of the day, sometimes it's a partial destruction of the universe. But we don't have to worry about that. It's so long that you'll be back with Krishna before that happens, right? It's just like so many years. I don't think any of us will be around. We should worry about something called the constant destruction. There's many types of, in the Bhagavatam, they talk about devastations. And but the constant devastation is the one we should worry about. What does that mean? That means constantly things are falling apart with this body. Because right now you're young and you have a lot of energy and everything like that, but one day you'll be sitting here and you'll be old. And everyone will be sitting down there young. And you'll be an old person, old body. So that, and then eventually the body starts to break down like a car. And then when the car breaks down, you have to trade it in for a new car, right? So the that's the devastation. And that's a greater concern than what will happen to the sun, what will happen to the earth. Of course, nowadays people are worried about global warming. You've heard about that before?
Yes.
That's something that you probably will have to worry about in this lifetime. because people are abusing Bhumi, who's the earth. And because of that, she's responding in different ways. Just like Bhumi is a person. Just like we have a body, and what happens if let's say a disease attacks us. We have an immune system, right? Let's say if you get the flu. You have the flu here sometimes?
Yes.
Now.
Bad one.
Bad flu. Yes. But your body gets rid of the flu after how long? About a week or so.
Yes.
So the earth right now is not very happy with us. Why isn't the earth happy with us?
Because
what?
Too many co-slaughtering going on.
Yeah, we're killing cows. We're exploiting the earth. We're polluting the earth. So the earth thinks, oh, these people are not so good. So we better become Krishna conscious so the earth takes care of us. Okay, who's next?
One more,
oh, Madhavi had another question.
And also that people have different beliefs of God, and how some beliefs have God came down to earth and some stuff like that. About Christianity, some people say when Jesus came down to earth, I was just wondering if it was related to because some religions are related to other religions. So would how when Jesus came down to earth, in the religion of Christianity, would it be sort of would it be related to Krishna consciousness in any way?
Yes. Jesus is what we call an avatar. You know what the word avatar means?
Yes.
What does it mean?
An incarnation.
But what is the literal translation of that word? It means someone who crosses down. Tara means to cross, actually. Just you have the word Tirtha, which is the same root, which means a crossing place, or as they say in science fiction, a portal. Anyone heard that word before?
Mm-hmm.
Those of you watched science fiction. So it's a crossing place. So an avatar is someone who comes down. Why does he come down? To preach. Sometimes an avatar is Krishna, and sometimes an avatar is what we call jiva soul, like a soul like you and me. And that avatar is sent down for a mission, just like Prabhupada is one of those. He was sent down. So Jesus Christ is what we call Shakta Vesh avatar. He was given the power to preach to people who were not very advanced, because they were living in the Middle East. You'll find that there's three different Middle East primary, there's other religions, but there's three different primary Middle Eastern religions. What are they? Does anyone know? The Dallas would probably know this.
Judaism?
Orthodox.
Christianity. I'm just like Christianity in the broad heading.
And Islam.
And they're all very similar. Very, very similar. Because the people who taught that religion, like in Judaism, of course, you have people like Moses and other people like that. And in Christianity, you have Jesus Christ, and then you have Muhammad in the Muslim religion. They were sent by God to teach according to a particular circumstance. Circumstance means people are educated in a certain way, people have certain types of food. And the interesting thing is, in the Middle East, primarily, there weren't too many vegetables and fruits and stuff like that. It was primarily a desert. So the people really had to do things like eat fish. We don't like to eat fish because we have plenty of vegetables and fruits. But the people in the Middle East had to eat those things. And they were not educated. They didn't have the internet. That's interesting. And they didn't read. They were 99% illiterate. Even Muhammad, did you know that? He didn't know how to read. He was illiterate. He dictated things. And of course, Jesus Christ knew how to read because he was a rabbi or a priest in the Jewish religion. So they didn't know how to read. So they're very primitive. So when you're preaching to primitive people, what do you say? You say, love God, which is true, and all the day you should love God, you should serve other people. But if you say anything else, what will they do? They'll kill you. Like if Jesus Christ was to say to people, hey, reincarnation, they would say, oh, we're going to crucify you sooner. Because that's how Jesus Christ left this world. They crucified him. And of course, then he had some resurrection. He rose from the crucifixion. So because he was preaching to really low-class people, then he had to only present a little bit of the philosophy. Not a lot. Whereas Prabhupada was preaching also to low-class people. But Prabhupada was able to present everything because we were more educated, even though we were low-class. I mean, the whole Western culture is extremely low-class because they eat anything. Anything. And some countries, they even eat insects. Did you know that? They take these little bugs and fry them and crunch them.
Spiders.
And spiders. Who?
Snails.
Snails. So, therefore, Jesus Christ could not tell him everything. In fact, Jesus Christ even said, in the Bible, he said, there is much that I have to tell you, but you can't bear to hear. You can't understand it, so I'm not going to tell you. So a devotee, when he comes down, he has to preach according to the people he's talking to. So that's really important. So that's Jesus Christ. We respect him. Prabhupada said he is like our guru because he taught the people to love God. Unfortunately, the people now are not following Jesus Christ because Jesus Christ said one thing that Prabhupada talked about a lot. Jesus Christ was repeating one of the Ten Commandments, and that commandment was, thou shalt not kill. And what are the Christians doing in general?
Eating meat.
Eating meat and killing. And they don't follow that. Even one time I visited a Catholic monastery, and in that monastery, the rule was no meat. And I asked them, but they were eating meat. I said, why are you eating meat? And he said, well, that was for a few hundred years ago. Now we're in America, we can eat meat. Because it's cold. So it's crazy. So yes, we respect Jesus Christ, and we respect anyone who follows him, but first of all, they have to give up eating meat and killing animals, okay? Okay, who's next?
Keshav B.
Keshav B.
So, my first question is from Prasby Yamaraj.
Is from who? From
Prasby Yamaraj.
Prasby Yamaraj, okay.
It came to 6, chapter 3, verse 29.
I remember. I do not remember it.
It says
this is telling you the...
It says in the translation, my dear servants, please bring me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy name and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna, even once, and whose head does not bow down once before Lord Krishna. So if you have bowed down your head to Krishna once and you have remembered Krishna, will you go to Yamaraj or will you not?
That's an interesting question. Let me think about that for a second. If you chant Hare Krishna once, yes, and if you worship Krishna once, that's the beginning of your devotional service. Krishna says in the Gita, Svapam apyasya dharmacha trayate mahatobayat. He says, a little endeavor in this path will save one from the most dangerous fear. So yes, one will not have to see Yamaraj in a bad way. You may see Yamaraj in a good way. He may come and talk to you a little bit about Krishna, because he's a pure devotee. But you won't be tortured by him. So you don't have to worry then. Now you can do anything you want the rest of your life. And you won't see Yamaraj, but you may get some other reaction. And actually, Krishna, if a devotee deviates from Krishna consciousness, Krishna directly takes care of it. And sometimes he takes everything away, and you lose all your friends, you lose all your money, and then all you can do is chant Hare Krishna. You see that when a devotee gets very proud, or he's attached to anything, Krishna actually takes it away. So, any other questions?
One more. The second was like, in school, some of the people in my class teach me about my sikha.
Yeah. You got a big sikha now. It covers the whole head. You still have one? Or?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice.
So, I don't know what to say to them because I don't know what it actually kind of represents and... And what should I say to them?
Well, you can explain that it represents your culture. That you're from, your religion is your Gaudiya, your Vaishnava. If you say Gaudiya Vaishnava, then it's too complex. But if you're a Vaishnava and you worship Vishnu, and it's a tradition in your culture to have your hair like that. It's a very simple thing. Don't say that's the way Krishna takes you back to God. Prabhupada jokingly said that one time. But then what would you do? What would someone do if they're bald? They couldn't go back to God. And then the women could go back to God before the men. Because they have bigger sikhas than the men, right? I mean, if Krishna tried to pull me by my sikha, it would come out. The sikha is a traditional thing. Just like the dress that we have, a traditional thing for Brahmins too. For those who are intellectuals in India. Just like we have a dress, it's traditional. That's all it is, and it's not. You can go back to Godhead wearing pants if you want.
Is it also to distinguish from impersonalists as well and to say we're attached to one thing that's Krishna as well?
Yeah, because that would be hard for him to explain in school. That this is to distinguish from Maya bodies like you. It would be very hard for him to explain that. So it's better just to say this is tradition. Mm-hmm. Tradition. Like anything else, like neck beads, everything tradition. Okay, what are the questions?
Maharaj, Prabhupada had so much endeavor to serve his spiritual master. Following him in his footsteps, how do we get the intense desire to serve spiritual masters?
Well, first of all, we should study Prabhupada's life. Just recently, of course, it was Prabhupada's appearance day. And if you examine the difference between Srila Prabhupada and all of his godbrothers, you will see that the vast difference is that Srila Prabhupada took the order of his spiritual master much more seriously than anyone else. Like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had ordered many of his disciples to go to the West and preach in English. Not just one, not just Prabhupada. Anyone who spoke English, he ordered to do. However, the other ones, and now this is not to criticize anyone, of course we should not criticize Vaishnavas, did not take it as their very life and soul. So because Prabhupada took it as his life and soul, he got all success. So that's the point. Within the order of the spiritual master, within the order of Srila Prabhupada and his representatives, the success potency is there. Like if Prabhupada would tell us something, we'd be successful. Even if it was impossible. I remember one time Prabhupada told us, I was there, Prabhupada told us to print or publish 17 books in 2 months. You all know that story. And the devotee said, impossible! And Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And then after being chastised by Prabhupada, we all did it. So if you read about Prabhupada and his life and everything he did and his dedication to his spiritual master, certainly you'll develop maybe not the same dedication, but you'll be inspired by that dedication to be dedicated yourself. That's how we do it. Example is better than precept. What that means is we see the example of Prabhupada, it's better than someone telling you you have to do something. You know, I can say, you should be devoted, you should be devoted, you should. It doesn't do it. It doesn't do anything. But we all function on the basis of what's called role models. You know what a role model is? That means we look up to someone and we say, I'd like to be like that person when I grow up.
You inspire them.
Like when I was young, of course, before I met Prabhupada, the people who inspired me were like firemen and, you know, like fire brigade people, yeah. Because they were saving people. Of course, that was good, because later on I learned how to save people spiritually. So that was a good role model. Now, the young people, many times they have very bad role models. Like some of the sports stars, I don't want to criticize anybody, who don't follow any regulated principles, who do so many horrible things, who get divorced, isn't it? Mm. These are the role models for the people, or the politicians, of course, politicians usually aren't role models. But usually sports stars and Bollywood stars, right? Like if you pick up a newspaper in Fiji, you'll see many, many pages about these Bollywood actors and actresses. So our role models in the Krishna Conscious Movement should be Srila Prabhupada. And that's what I thought when I joined the movement. I met Prabhupada, and the first thing I thought is, I want to be like that when I grow up. And I was about 21 years old. So that's how you can become dedicated. By seeing someone and wanting to be like that person. Role model. So?
Another question?
This question is related to the previous question in a way. In the Lilamrita, it says that when Prabhupada had trouble in the Bowery with his roommate, he called people to come over and help him.
Mm-hmm.
What gave the people he called the urge to help him and serve him, and how did the people come to know about him?
Oh, you mean how? How did the people know about him, that he called them?
Yeah.
Well, he had met them. He was doing programs, preaching programs. And one of those persons was Mukunda Maharaj, who's now here in Australia, of course, in New Govardhan. And that's how we met them. And he said, save me, because the person he was living with in that loft, and I forget his name right now, he had taken intoxication and gone crazy. That's the story you're referring to, right? And that's how Prabhupada knew the people. To take me out of here. And Prabhupada he was so, let's say, I wouldn't say frightened, because Prabhupada was never frightened, but so disgusted with what was going on that he said, take me out of here immediately. Does that answer the question? Or?
And then the last, we're all from Isha.
Isha, okay. How many questions does she have?
Seven
questions, oh my God.
You said two, Maharaj, but what can you do?
Okay, we'll do it quickly.
I don't have to do all of them today. I cannot.
Okay, no, sorry. What happened?
Nah, kicked.
Someone kicked?
Yeah.
Kind of. Kind of kicked you.
What do we say if someone asks us, how can the chanting of the Hare Krishna moment have ever increasing this? And what do we, what should be our epistemology? And should it be from Guru's Sadhu or Shastri?
Of course, just to answer, first of all, what epistemology means, how do you know what you know?
Yes.
Everybody knows that word. Okay.
We know that.
So, you know, why does chanting Hare Krishna give you bliss?
How it has ever-increasing bliss.
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. I mean, the question could be answered in various ways. I mean, who would you want the question answered in reference to?
Like a devotee.
Another devotee. Okay. So then you have to ask, first of all, why you're not experiencing bliss. And the reason you're not experiencing bliss is because you're in the modes of nature. Right? And he goes, especially in the mode of passion and ignorance. In the mode of passion, what type of happiness do you experience in the mode of passion? In the beginning, it's like, what, nectar, and at the end, like poison. And in the mode of goodness, what? It's a little difficult. Yeah, poison in the beginning, and then it becomes nectar at the end. And in the mode of ignorance, it's what? It's horrible from the beginning to the end. So the reason you're suffering, you're not experiencing happiness, let's take it from a negative direction, is because you're in the modes of nature. But then Krishna says, Mam chiyo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. Sagunan samati chayatan. Rama Bhuyaya Kalpate. Does anyone know that verse? If one chants, performs devotional service, then one transcends the modes of nature and comes to the platform of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Ananda means bliss. And Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, as Prabhupada would say many times. Krishna is all attractive. And so, by chanting Krishna's names, we're actually coming in contact, because the name is non-different from Krishna, we're coming in contact with the reservoir of all pleasure. Reservoir means the origin, or the like the ocean is a reservoir of water. So it's unlimited. And whereas material happiness has a beginning and the end, and an end to it. So that's one explanation. Okay.
How about if it's just from someone...
Well, just like a non-devotee asking?
Yeah.
Okay. The name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. Just like you and I have names.
Yeah.
But our name is different from ourselves. Of course, our spiritual name is non-different from Krishna. Like if you're the Kesha, the Isha, like that. But let's say our material... Well, I have a material name. I'm not going to tell you what it is. But let's say if someone chanted my material name, I'm not there. Or, as Prabhupada gives the example, if you chant... water, water, water. Water's not there. But the nice thing about spiritual sound vibration, the name and the nami, the name and the person or the thing it's referred to, you're referring to, is the same. Like you say, Ganges, the river Ganges, then the Ganges is there. Radhakund, Giriraj, then Giriraj is there. It's nice, isn't it? And the picture, too. Of course, you don't want to explain about the picture because non-devotees will never understand that one. But it, like, at least sound vibration. Just like even if one's a Christian, you can explain what it says in the beginning of the Bible. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. Wow. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? And the Word was God. Actually, the actual word used in Greek is logos. Anyway, so you can explain that God is not different from his name, and all pleasure, happiness comes from God. So when we come in contact with God, we get happiness. Okay, next question.
What exactly happens to a person whose bhakti is mixed with karma and jnana?
What happens to a person whose bhakti is mixed with karma and jnana is that Krishna gradually purifies him. Can you think of an example of a devotee whose bhakti was mixed with karma? In the Bhagavatam, there's an example. Not Bhishma, no. Dhruva.
Oh.
Dhruva.
He had to desire to serve his status.
Yeah, Dhruva had a material desire, big material. That's karma, nidra, bhakti. And so Krishna purifies him. Eventually, when he saw Krishna, what happened?
He lost his want for...
Yeah, he said, I was looking for a piece of broken glass and I found a beautiful gem instead. Wow. And there's also devotees who Gyanamishra bhakti. Can you think of an example of that?
The four Kumaras?
Yeah, you got it. The four Kumaras. But then as soon as they came in contact with Krishna, and they smelled the flowers and tulsi leaves offered the lotus feet of Krishna, then they gave all that up. Interesting. So Krishna eventually purifies. Because Krishna says in the Gita that four types of people approach him. Does anyone know the four types? You know the four types? What?
People who are inquisitive.
Yeah. Or let's see.
The one who's looking for the absolute truth.
Yeah, looking for knowledge, yeah.
In distress.
What?
The one who's after something. In distress.
There's one.
In distress.
Well, those who are seeking wealth.
Seeking wealth.
Inquisitive, knowledge, and distressed.
Yeah. And so people come, and Krishna says these are great souls. They come for some other reason. But after a while, they're like Dhruva. They said, wow. Just like, I came to the Krishna conscious movement, and I was looking for knowledge. I was trying to find out who God was, what happens at the time of death, where did I come from before I was born? What's life all about? So I came, and I was looking for knowledge, and my knowledge was satisfied. In other words, my search was satisfied. And then, now I'm not looking for knowledge anymore, even though I have it. I'm looking for pure bhakti. So you get purified. And I tell the story, funny story, when I was a young devotee, also I wanted liberation. I was chanting japa. Do you remember the story I told? I go to sleep at night with my bead bag in my hand, attached to my hand. I'd be chanting japa, and I would pray, Krishna, don't let me wake up tomorrow. Let me go back to Godhead. Kill me tonight. And fortunately, Krishna didn't follow what I was asking for. And I'm still here. The body's still here. So, yeah, so Krishna purifies all those things. Okay. Nice questions.
Why is it that we start to fear the Lord from his lotus feet rather than his face?
Ah. Well, first of all, every part of the Lord is completely transcendental. And actually, it says in the Brahma Samhita that Krishna can do anything with any part of his body. Anganiya, shah, shakalam, triyadri, tumanti. And so, it's a method of humility, expressing humility when approaching the Lord. Like, Lord Chaitanya instructs us, Trinadapi Sudichina, but all you are Sahishina. And then,
it's
like I turned on the MP3 player. But, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer
all respects to others, in
such a state of mind,
and of the Lord constantly.
Very good. So it's a way of expressing humility. And another very important point is, what is at Krishna's feet? Who is at Krishna's feet? Anyway, what do you find at Krishna's lotus feet?
Tulsi
leaves and his devotees. You can pray to the tulsi leaves and the tulsi manjaris and Krishna's devotees. Like Prabhupada is called Prabhupada because other Prabhus sit at his feet, and also because he sits at the Prabhu's feet. The main Prabhu is Krishna. So the devotees are situated there at the Lord's lotus feet. So that's how you approach the Lord, through his devotees. Krishna says, the Adi Purana, one who says he is my devotee is not my devotee, but one who says he is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. Good question.
What do we say if someone asks us about the Tisimuk succession?
Well, you can explain this just like at the university. Or anywhere. Like, if you want to be a teacher, who do you learn from? Does anyone know?
Another teacher.
Another teacher! You're going to school, and you have teachers. And how does the teacher learn how to teach?
From another teacher.
And how do the teacher's teacher learn how to teach?
From another teacher.
And how does the teacher learn how to cheat? So you go back to the original teacher, it's Krishna.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously the point, that if you want to know anything, I mean, if you start from, what we say, scratch, from the very beginning, you're going to have to reinvent everything. You know, if I want to tell you, let's say we're talking about building a house. I was talking to Naveen about building a house. So, if you start and design your own house, it takes a lot longer, doesn't it? I was talking to Naveen about that. I asked him, why didn't you just buy plans that were already there? You could have had your house built by now, right? Because they have all these what's called stock plans. But instead, you start from the beginning.
Scratch.
It's called scratch. Oh, you have that expression here, too. And then you go back and forth, and you ask this person and that person. Everyone has a different idea. And it takes 10 years to get your plans for the house. I mean, that's good. I'm not criticizing that procedure. It just takes longer. So if you want to learn something, you have to go to an authorized teacher. Otherwise, if you try to invent knowledge yourself and go from scratch, especially with knowledge, it'll take you unlimited amount of time. So any subject matter, if you want to be an engineer, if you want to be a car mechanic, if you want to be a doctor, anything, you have to learn from someone who's learned from someone who's learned from someone who's learned from someone who's learned from someone, who's learned from someone. All the way back to Krishna, the original teacher. Yeah.
This question comes from 1.9.33. In Vishwadev Express, Vishwadev says that Krishna is all attractive and everyone is attracted to him. And then again in 9.2, he says that anyone who is engaged in devotional service is immediately attached to Krishna. Even though this is stated in Shastra, why isn't it still true in Kali Yuga? Why don't people change anymore?
What is the question? When they take up Krishna consciousness?
No, why aren't people attracted to Krishna anymore?
That's explained in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, first chapter, text 4. Nivrittatar sharu bhagyamanas prabhavshidat shotra manava viramat kagutama shlava gunana vadat human vidajeta dana ashubnat. Very interesting verse. In one sense, it's almost considered like a nutshell verse in the 10th canto. It says that everyone will be attracted to Krishna, except for those who are pashugnat, who are actually killers of animals, because they're doing so many sinful activities, then they're so covered up by the mode of ignorance, they will not be attracted to Krishna. However, they are attracted to Krishna's energies. They're not attracted to Krishna directly, and that's a punishment. That's a punishment. And so that verse explains it very nice. Everyone will be attracted to the transcendental glorification of Krishna, except for those who are killers of animals. So Prabhupada actually said, if someone's a meat eater, they cannot understand God consciousness. It's actually impossible. And sometimes in the beginning, the devotees would call meat eaters meatheads. Did you hear that expression before?
Yeah.
They call it meatheads. And people just can't understand why killing animals is bad. It's incredible, isn't it? Because they're so attached to the tongue. It's like we have our prasadam prayer. What does the prasadam prayer say? The translation.
It's like thanking Krishna for making this.
Yeah, but what does it say about the tongue?
That the tongue is uncontrollable.
Most voracious and uncontrollable.
It's saying thank you for this
Pratishad. Help us control the tongue.
My tongue.
The Krishna needs to control the tongue.
Very hard to control the tongue. It's just like, do you ever see a dog?
A dog?
Yeah. Dog has a tail, right? What does a dog do with a tail?
It
wags it. Have you ever seen the tail wag the dog? Anyone's ever seen that? You have.
Yeah.
You've seen the tail just remain stationary and the dog go like that?
I've seen the tail wag so hard that the dog goes.
Yeah. No, but I've never seen the tail just be stationary and the dog go all over the place. So we have this thing called the tongue, and that's wagging us. because we follow it, whatever the tongue tells us. We do it. And so many people get sick because they just listen to the tongue. If you want to see who your master is, just open your mouth and look in the mirror. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's my biggest master of all? The tongue. Any other questions?
You want to ask that diamond in the rough question?
Diamond in the rough.
That question. Geshev was, saying a key point in class about Jafar was being always chanting. And Nandalaprabhu gave the example of Vrajvasis who always chant Krishna's name. But isn't it that only people who chant Krishna's name with full devotion heartfulness, or is it just overall people who chant Krishna's name?
So in that verse, actually there's many references, but Dridavrataha is a very important point with determination. Determination means chanting Krishna's name has to be done with one's mind in addition to externally. It's not that we should chant like a robot or something like that. That is not...
Or a parrot.
Or a parrot, yeah. Like Prabhupada gave the example of a parrot, that when a parrot is choked, a parrot won't chant Hare Krishna. The parrot will just go, like that. So we should chant with our heart. And actually, Haridas Thakur, he would chant 64 of his rounds in his mind. Did you know this? He would chant... 64, he chanted 3 times 64 rounds a day. He would chant 64 rounds very loudly, 64 rounds softly, and 64 rounds in the mind. I'm not saying we should do our rounds in our mind. But one way I find to train the mind is to sometimes chant one round in your mind without moving your mouth. And you'll see how little you concentrate. And it helps train up the mind. So when you're chanting, you should be chanting with the mind and the heart, which is very important. In other words, our heart should be offering our love to Krishna while we're chanting, or praying for something that's important. Sometimes when I chant, I pray for someone else. I'm not always saying, Krishna, let me love you. I'm saying, Krishna, please make Keshav a devotee. You know, praying for someone. You know, if someone's having some trouble or something like that. So I'm chanting with my heart. There's a, what we call in Sanskrit, a sankalpa, an intention. So before we chant, we should be thinking, why am I chanting? Not just, oh, I have to chant, oh, 16 rounds, oh. And then you move your job to the exam. And like Prabhupada one time jokingly said when he finished all his rounds, now I've finished 16 rounds, I can do any damn thing. So that's not how our chanting should be with the heart. We should be praying. Chanting is praying to Krishna. And then you're a Mahatma when you do that. Not just if you... you are, let's say, a diamond in the rough, so to speak. A potential Mahatma. Just like a little bud in a tree is going to become a flower. So it is a flower in one sense, but it's not opened yet. So in one sense, Prabhupada said that all of his followers who are following strictly were pure devotees, in the sense that they are potential pure devotees. Just like Keshav is a potential businessman. It's just time is separating them. Would you want to do business? No. What do you want to do? You don't know. So just time is separating. In other words, it's like saying Keshav is an adult. It's just a question of time. But he hasn't realized that yet. But if he proceeds nicely and avoids problems and eats nicely, he'll realize that. Diamond in the rough. Just like when you first get a diamond, it doesn't look like a piece of jewelry. It just looks like a stone. And then you have someone who chips away very, very delicately and brings out the shape of the diamond. All right? Is that it?
Yes.
Oh, one more question? No?
No.
Okay.
Does anyone want to thank Maharaj because he's so tired and he traveled so much and spent time?
Little tired. I've traveled about 35 hours.
35 hours.
Yeah, first I left the United States and took one plane that was an hour and a half. Then waited another hour to take another plane that was 6 hours to Los Angeles. Then waited 7 hours in the airport in Los Angeles. And took another plane that was 14 hours. I haven't added it all up. And then I'm here. So a little tired. Not too bad. I'm not this body.
Thank you for coming, Maharaj. Everybody would really appreciate you coming for such a long trip and being here.
Thank you. All right, so what happens now?
Feet washing and garland
and then prasad, right?
Yep.
Yes.
That's nice.